Good evening. Our first order of business tonight. Our first order of business tonight is a public hearing on the continuations of and modifications to Agricultural District Number 1, the east side of Chuga Lake, including the towns of Lansing, Groton, Dryden, Caroline, and parts of Danby and Ithaca. Is there anyone who'd like to speak as part of the public hearing? Debbie.
I'm Debbie Teeter from Cooperative Extension, and I would like to speak.
Go right ahead.
To provide you with a little overview and background in addition to the information you got from the Ag and Farm Protection Board. I understand there was a question about whether or not any maps would be coming, and in thinking about it, I think it would be really impractical at this point, because these maps that I have on the wall, and I will leave them here, are by town, and the map that I use of both ag districts together is about the size of one of these maps, and I have to read it with a magnifying glass. So I don't think you'd get much out of a map. But by the time we come back with the Ag and Farm Protection Board's final recommendations in February, we'll have figured out how to do the maps for you so that they make sense and you can read them. These are maps of each of the towns involved, and I will leave them up and come back to them tomorrow if you want to take a look at them. What we have is the lighter yellow color is actually a hash mark, and that denotes the agricultural district in each town. And then there is a darker color, a mustard or a yellow. Those are agriculturally assessed parcels. And there's some parcels that you may not be able to see, even up close you may not be able to see, that are a darker color still. And those are agriculturally assessed parcels that are not in the agricultural district. So those, as this indicates, those are parcels that we've been in consultation with the towns about, whether or not it would make sense to approach those landowners and confirm that they're agricultural parcels and give them information about the district and see if they would like to have their land considered for addition. I just want to stress that this is a preliminary, broad view that we're taking, and there could be probably not significant changes, but some changes, and the process will be contacting these landowners, the Ag and Farmland Protection Board, making their final determinations in December, then going to the Planning Advisory Board, then PDEQ, and then back to the legislature with the final recommendations, hopefully in February if we're able to stick to the timeline with everyone's meetings. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Has any questions, please feel free to
Thank you very much, Debbie.
Thank you.
Does anybody have questions tonight? Will.
I mean, maybe you could remind us what the significance of the different classifications is. What does it mean to be an ag district or an ag assessment?
Sure. You don't, excuse me, you don't actually have to be in the district to get agricultural assessment, but agricultural assessment is a rolling process. Every year you commit to farming for a certain period of time, and if you're in the district, it's a shorter period of time. I think it's 5 years, and if you're out of the district, it's 7 years. Probably the most, if not one of the most important benefits of the agricultural district is the state right to farm law, which protects landowners from nuisance lawsuits and also provides a disclosure notification at closing. When you buy a home in an agricultural district, you're notified, you have to sign a form that says you understand you're buying a home in an agricultural district and you need to be prepared for farming.
Thank you.
Carol?
Debbie, we don't necessarily need the information tonight, but I would be interested at some point, either here or PDEC or in some other venue, to hear something more about conversations that the board has had about gas drilling and what it potentially might do to ag district status, to have the industrial activity happening on people's land, and what you've been able to learn, if anything, about how this will operate in New York State?
Probably it is a better conversation for PDEC, unless you'd like me to address it now. I know your agenda is usually pretty full. So shall we wait and do it then, and then we can have an additional conversation here when we come back, if you'd like, in February? Or? What's the board's pleasure?
That sounds good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Would anyone else like to speak in as part of the public hearing? All right, I'll close the hearing and open the November 15th, 2011 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands.
which stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call of members. Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsee?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna? Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robinson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Stein? Mr. Burbank?
I'm here.
Ms. Chalk?
I am here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
13 members present?
Actually, 14. Welcome, Dave. Hello. Okay. I would like to reorder things just a little bit so that the Health and Human Services Committee comes at the top of our standing committee reports to for the benefit of staff who are waiting for items. Are there any members of the public who'd like to address the legislature? Okay. How about the legislature? Legislature privilege. Pat.
Thank you, Martha. I wanted to call everyone's attention to an effort that's started recently in our community that some of you, and I'm hoping some of the people listening tonight, might like to know about. This is an effort to help our friends and neighbors who live in the Binghamton, Owego, Apalachin area and are still suffering the effects of the recent flooding. And it's an effort to help provide flood relief that began in the Lansing United Methodist Church, but is very much open to anybody from the community. This Saturday, there will be a team of people going down to that area to help with the cleanup effort after the flood. And two Saturdays ago, the first team went down. And their work was very much appreciated. There's still a great deal of cleanup work, basic cleanup work that needs to be done down there. There are other ways to help as well, besides just going down and helping with the teams that are actually going down. And I just would like to let you know that if anyone would like more information about this, would like to participate in this flood relief effort, the person to contact is Marcia Lynch. And her phone number is 607-227-2152. I'm going to repeat that. 607-227-2152. That's if you would like to be part of a team going down to work on flood relief in the Binghamton, Apalachin, Owego area, or if you would like to talk to Marcia about some of the other ways that you might get involved and help. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. Mike?
I have a couple things tonight. One, I'd like to call everyone's attention to the new display that we have here in the legislative chambers, which we have a new quilt, courtesy of the History Center. This being the sesquicentennial of the Civil War, we were kind of interested in having something that might have a connection to the Civil War, and I think this does. I'd like to thank some people. I want to thank Karen Fuller for her efforts in getting this here. Also Scott Callen from the History Center and Donna Eschenberg Brenner from the History Center, who sent this brief description of this quilt. That silk quilt was owned by the Freer family of Trumansburg and probably made by a member of that family. It's called a Lemoyne Star. It dates to the mid-1850s and suggests that the maker was a Quaker. Quakers were abolitionists and boycotted American cotton in this period. The subdued colors were typical of those used by Quaker women of that period, and was the plain brown polished cotton on the back. This was recently displayed in a Tompkins County Quilters Guild exhibit and was much appreciated at that exhibit that was held up at TC3 a few months ago. So we have a connection to the Civil War, and we have a nice display. We've had some wonderful quilts here in the past, and I just wanted everyone to pay attention to that. The other thing I wanted to mention tonight was my disappointment recently with respect to what had happened with the TCAT service recently, where there was a shortage of drivers for whatever reason, and a decision was made to eliminate service to some of the routes in the rural areas as opposed to some of the central areas. The rural service of TCAT system had its genesis here in Tompkins County as the Tomtran service, which was designed for rural passengers. We came together a few years ago with Cornell Transit and with Ithaca Transit to form TCAT. But I think it's very important that we make sure that our rural carriers, our rural passengers, are equally well served out there. This comes on top of the reinstitution of a two-zone system, a higher fares for those folks in the rural areas. I'd really like to know more about what's happening here, particularly this recent decision about canceling the rural services. And I think that it's something we need to pay attention for as an equal partner in this enterprise.
Thank you very much, Frank. Mike, I appreciate that comment. And Frank, do you want to address that?
Thanks, Martha. First, I'd just like to thank particularly, I saw Jim, and there may have been others there, but unfortunately I wasn't able to see you. The Veterans Day ceremony last Friday at DeWitt Park was extremely well attended, one of the best I think any one of us have seen or participated in, and the speakers were outstanding. There were representatives from the city. J.R. Claiborne gave a very moving and thoughtful talk, and any of the rest of you, I really apologize, but from where I was standing, I could only see Jim's head bobbing up and down next to Nancy Shuler. So I'm properly embarrassed, Jim Dennis, and thank you very much for the effort. Since Mike brought it up, I'd just like to make a comment about the TCAT service. Obviously, that was not a planned move on behalf of TCAT, and I can tell from some of the comments that have gone around that there was a major concern, and of course those of us, Pam, Kathy, and myself, feel equally concerned. The concern was precipitated by a sick out, precipitated by 22 individuals. 18 of them were TCAT rural bus drivers. They drove the rural routes. And in deference to those of you that, and I appreciate this, you're probably not, I've got to believe, you're not as familiar as the three of us are with the method in which routes are selected. It is not appropriate generally for TCAT to move drivers around. Drivers bid on routes, and part of that is in the union-negotiated contract. The day that that happened, we were just as surprised as anybody else as to what happened, and I agree that it left the rural riders pretty well stranded. But you've read the news report, I'm sure, that the decision included, and Patty Poist, who is the marketing individual, was pretty good about sending out repeated and updated news releases. One of the concerns was not knowing if they'd be able to get the riders back home. We might have been able to patch, if we could, ride drivers together, but to return the riders at home for the evening run was totally up in the air. So while I appreciate Mike's concern and others that have raised that, the decision certainly wasn't TCAT's to cause aggravation for the riders, but it was an unfortunate circumstance. I had a budget committee meeting earlier today. This was a topic of conversation, and we have, as I mentioned to Martha, we have an executive committee meeting tomorrow And I'm sure that this is on the agenda, I know, for discussion tomorrow, and Pam and Kathy usually attend those meetings with me. But rest assured that the concerns of the populace, including those of us that represent the rural riders, are very, very concerned about what happened and how it happened. And just one correction, the fare change has not been instituted at this point. The budget for TCAT has not been voted on. That'll be December the 1st, and it's unclear at this point whether the fare change will go into effect, because that's a decision that'll be made by the TCAT board on December 1st. Just for clarification. Thank you, Martha.
Thank you for that report. I agree with Mike that I feel like if people got to, the biggest concern people have is getting to work, and they could spend all day figuring out getting a ride home. So if you could express that when you meet with the executive committee, I have concerns about that, but even more about the lack of communication. I think that as one-third funders, it would have been helpful if we'd had some information directly from the TCAT director about what happened and about the decision-making process. So that's something else I would ask that you carry to the executive committee and figure out a process of after an event like that, could we get more information more directly? Would be appreciated. Anyone else? Carol, then Peter.
Yeah, I think it's timely to bring people a little bit up to date on some of the activities related to hydrofracking and the DEC comment period, which is rapidly closing on us. The TCOG Gas Drilling Task Force, to which I am liaison, has been working furiously to meet the December 12th deadline, according to the DEC official process for comments. It is very clear that whatever else you have done or weighed in, or whatever groups you're part of that have weighed in, this is the official time, and they've made it very clear that anything that isn't part of an official submission will not be considered at all. December 12th, 5 o'clock in the afternoon is the deadline. Comments can be submitted either in writing or on a very cumbersome but doable online system. The thing to know there is that you should have your comments prepared ahead of time, and you get these 25 sections to insert comments into that correspond with the 25 chapters in the EIS. So they're asking basically the public to collate comments for them, and that makes sense. If I entered comments on streams and on noise and on mortgages, they'd like to have, each of the stream set of stream comments together, and so they don't have to, in addition to what they had to do last time, figure out which letters should go in which multiple piles. There are instructions out there circulating, and if people are looking for them on the TCOG website, you can find that. December 1st, I know there's a resolution coming to us tonight about funding, but the details for the actual hearing, TCOG is putting on a hearing with an official stenographer. We've invited a representative from the DEC who will be sitting in. We'll follow the same format, 3 minutes. And accept written comments. And I will say that of all of the things that I have done in my time on the legislature, that last hearing to the last round was, I think, the thing that I've participated in that I got the most feedback from. I think we had, 900 people attend that one. Only a fraction of those actually spoke. But, our government is doing something good. Our government, Tompkins County's name on that hearing, Tompkins County Council of Governments united in not a rally, not a position, but in hearing comments from all sides and helping our residents to register those comments with the DEC was greatly appreciated. So I urge you to come and speak. We'll be accepting written comments then as well to send in. This Thursday, November 17th, in Binghamton is the one of the four or five official DEC hearings at which some of the higher level DEC staff, although not the commissioner, will be sitting on the stage taking comments, that same format, 3 minutes. I believe that there's been a call from both sides of this issue to public officials in particular to come and weigh in. Public officials will get to speak for to sign up first, and then it will be open to the public. And that's from 1 to 4. You've got to get there early, and 6 to 9 in the evening in Binghamton. And I can't read my writing. There is a website. There are resources, on, as I said, on the TCOG, the Gas Drilling Task Force website. If you're looking for what have other people said, where can I get information, who's weighed in, our departments, you know, as our planning department and health department and Water Resources Council are assembling their comments, Tang, the task force, is assembling those and posting them in one spot, and you can go and pick and choose and make them your own. On that note, the Assessment and Land Valuation Task Force subcommittee has just put out, the lenders involved have just put out a letter that they have distributed to 85 lenders and lending industry trade groups around the state. About how they can weigh into their particular concerns. And so any questions, I'm happy to answer them later or here.
Carol, can you say the time of that TCOG?
The one that we're holding?
Yeah.
That will be 7 to 11 at December 1st at the State Theater. And we are still, that group is putting that on, is still looking for officials to sign up. It will be a three-hour shift, 6 to 9, or I think it's 8:30 to 11:30, to come and help, you know, line people up, sit at the tables accepting the comments, giving people instructions. I found it one of the most gratifying things I've ever done on the legislature was to be there, having people hand me their comments and with the sense that I want my comments to go in with the book that Tompkins County is submitting for us and the many conversations I was able to have with people on both sides of the issue was just great. So I urge people to sign up. If they want to sign up, they can see Martha or me.
Right. If you're willing to volunteer for part of that evening, we'll definitely need help. Public can sign up, I think, 6:30 to sign up, first come, first serve, for December 1st.
And I'll add, if you're looking to express an opinion as part of a group, there will be rallies outside of the State Theater or out down the Commons, I'm sure, with whatever perspective you'd like to express there. But the hearing itself is a hearing that we will conduct in an official, refined hearing manner.
All right. Thank you, Carol. Peter.
I'd like to report on a meeting I was just at in Schenectady, which, by the way, is why I was a few minutes late in getting in. I just got back from Schenectady, which was very pleasant and involved a member of county government, of the Tompkins County organization. There was a meeting there in Schenectady to give awards that are awarded jointly by Stop DWI in New York and by Mothers Against Drunk Driving. And they, every year, pick out something like half a dozen people from New York who have contributed exceptionally to their campaign against drunk driving. And one of those people this year was our very own Ryan Slocum, a deputy sheriff in the sheriff's department. And what Ryan had done to deserve this reward is really not only his continuing efforts to enforce drunk driving, but an act of heroism that I don't know how widely aware people are of this. So Ryan has made a large number of DWI address arrests. He is licensed in all of the various components that go through towards charging people with DWI. I had the pleasure isn't quite the right word, but I can't think of it, but I had the pleasure of actually riding with Ryan when he actually made a DWI arrest, and I saw it being done, and I was extremely impressed at the professionalism, the level of professionalism, the respect for the defendant, the man that was charged, but nonetheless a man with a strong hand, which pushed the process along and made sure that despite all of the circumstances that the person was pleading to why this time he shouldn't be charged, ended up with bringing him in and charging him. There was no nastiness. There was no unpleasantness. It was just clear that the man had committed a crime and that he was going to pay the price. But in addition to that, Ryan, sometime during this year, was visiting a friend in Rochester, and they went out to a restaurant together. And when Brian came out from the restaurant, he saw a car come up on the sidewalk and hit a couple of drivers and then pick up a human being and drag him along. And Ryan ran over to the car, managed while the driver was trying to accelerate the car over this person that was entangled in the bumper, managed to slam the shift lever into park and pull out the keys. And the person was drunk. And I think that Ryan, by his act, the person that he was dragging died. And I think that Ryan, by his act of personal heroism, probably saved several other people's lives. So it was a pleasure. I was proud to be there and was there with Derek Osborne and with Bob Lampman. And it was a very pleasant way to spend, to have lunch. So that's what I wanted to report on.
Thank you very much, Peter. I appreciate it. That's a great story.
I wonder if our youth of the is she here?
Yeah, I believe okay. They are. Yes.
Okay.
Why don't you come on up to the front and. Peter, use the mic.
Always nice to be needed.
Just stand that way. Yeah.
So, as you all know, every month someone of us selects a person, a young person, to award our Distinguished Youth Award to. And this month it was my good luck to have that responsibility. I remember the last time I went through this and read all of the people that had been recommended and have listened to the various awards that were given, it was remarkable to think of all of the ways that young people can contribute, all of the different ways that young people can contribute in a way that we mark as distinguished. I've heard about people that started a business. I've heard about people that were star athletes and inspired their team to win some crucial game. I've heard about students that were excellent students and in addition tutored other students. I've heard about people that did charity work in one way or another. I've heard of people who did, that started action groups to promote a certain idea or program that they think was not supported in their environment. And all of those things are good, important things to do. But with Johanna, when I read through the applications, I said, oh my goodness, I've never seen one of those. And what Johanna has done is helped a teacher teach. Now, that may not sound like much to you, but it went right to my heart because, Johanna, I've been a teacher. I've been a teacher for more than 55 years. I taught physics at Cornell. My daughter is a teacher. My son is a high school teacher. And I think, I counted up, I think that roughly half a dozen of us that sit around this room who were in one way or another or are teachers. And I believe teaching is a sacred calling. I mean, it's a crucial part of any culture. It's the way that we take a baby and turn the baby into a social being that can participate in the culture and the work of our society. It's crucial. Without that, you look at the deers going on. The deers have teachers. Their mothers teach the little ones where to find the grass. And the equivalent of that, as far as I'm concerned, in the early years, the first few years of life, are the parents. And then beyond that, I think more than the parents, it's the teachers that take over that particular role. And when I looked at what Johanna did, what I heard in her story was an understanding of what it is that teachers do, what teaching is. Let me tell you, a lot of people have the wrong idea about teaching. A lot of people think that what teaching is like filling gas in a car. You know, the kid comes in with no knowledge in the morning, you turn off the thing, you fill it with gas, and you close it up, and that's teaching. Or that's not teaching. More like teaching is filling a tank with gas that's got a hole in the bottom and it's running out. It is not just standing up and giving speeches. What it's doing is making some kind of a way to make a student teach himself or herself. After 50 years of teaching, I know that the only way a student gets taught is by seeing and doing and experiencing. And the role of the teacher is to guide that student in that process. Let me tell you what Johanna did. We all know about butterflies, right? You know that funny thing about the larvae, and then they do this, and then they all of a sudden they turn into butterflies. Well, that's something that's taught in every elementary school. And my belief is that, like most teaching, where all you do is you stand up there and you tell them about it, and you make a little picture, that goes in one ear and out the other, as they say. But there's something about experiencing which absolutely cements something. What Johanna did, if I understand properly, is that her father is an amateur breeder of butterflies. Is that correct? Did I get that right? Monarch butterflies. And what Johanna did was work with her teacher, many teachers, to allow elementary school teachers to actually have a larvae to give to their students in the class so they can touch it and feel it. And for that, she collected more than 2,000 of these larvae, which, by the way, only eat milkweed. And somehow grew that and went out and collected them. I mean, you can't imagine how difficult a job that is to collect 2,000 larvae. You do them one by one, no machine. Oh, there it is on the leaf. I think they pick it out, put it in a bag. And I believe that it's very likely that some student that actually saw that larvae and touched it and said, my God, there is something in here that's going to turn into a butterfly. You may have sparked a light in a candle that said to that student, this is interesting, I want to know more about this. And maybe 25 years later, there's somebody that makes an important discovery in insect science. So I think you have the soul of a teacher, and I hope that you pursue that. So I present to you Johanna Little, the breeder of monarch butterfly larvae, and has applied this work to teaching. So we have a plaque for you. And we have a little basket of things. And another little basket of things that have been provided by local businesses.
Thank you very much.
And I'll invite you and your father and your teacher, if they wish, to say a few remarks. Would you like to say something?
I think everyone would love to hear from you. Into the microphone.
So the last time I talked to one of these things, I ended up blowing up everybody's eardrums. Is this okay? Okay. Well, I wanted to thank Ms. Kidd for nominating me for this. It was a great thing for me, I think. My dad and I started doing this when I was really little, probably 6 years old. And what it was, actually, is we start out with just a few caterpillars. Those caterpillars will go on and eat until they turn into butterflies, and then we breed those butterflies, and that is how we get so many. I don't think there is a way we could possibly find 2,000 caterpillars in Ithaca. But, and it's something that I've enjoyed doing for my entire life. So I'm planning on doing this next year, too, and hopefully after I go to college, I still want to be doing something with butterflies because I love them so much. And I don't know if my dad or anyone else is saying.
I just want to thank Johanna for providing so many caterpillars to teachers all over Tompkins County, and just having the kids have that experience where they watch the life cycle of the monarchs and then get to release them. But this year they even surprised us with another amazing thing, and they brought about 50 adult monarchs to South Hill School and in a portable butterfly house, and the children were just in awe, and at the end of the day we released them, and it was just a beautiful sight. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you very much. That was wonderful.
Can I ask Johanna a question before she leaves?
Sure.
Are you interested in teaching?
I've thought about it before. I have trouble with small children.
You don't have to be small children. I asked that question because it's like a youth bureau.
I was thinking about it earlier today.
I was actually thinking about it earlier today watching my AP Biology teacher teach, and I'd never really considered it before, but I was thinking about it this morning during first period, and I thought that it might actually be a good thing for me to do.
Get it, girl. Well, I asked that question particularly because the Ithaca Youth Bureau is working on a teach program, so basically a grow your own teacher program. There is a meeting on the 16th, was that tomorrow? Really encouraging students in our Tompkins County area to observe some of the student teachers come out of college, but also to really try and help those who are interested, high schoolers who are interested in going into the teaching profession, to learn more about it, to get some hands-on experience, and really work in mentoring and supporting you throughout your decision-making about becoming a teacher. So think about it. If you want more information, please call the Youth Bureau,
okay.
And they can tell you about it.
Thank you. That sounds really interesting.
You're very welcome.
What?
Johanna? There's little children. There's bigger children. There's middle schoolers. Boy, that's the tough one. There's high schoolers. There's college students. They all need teaching. It's all important. And contributions at the through that whole range are really important.
Okay. Kids are being a kindergarten teacher, just the younger kids was what I had in my mind. But I have considered maybe what teaching high schoolers would be like, and that I think would be a fun thing to do.
Carol had something.
Yeah, I want to know if there's any place. Do you have a greenhouse or someplace that we could all come and have butterflies land on us?
You don't want us to come.
Every fall we have an open house that any butterflies that we have, there's a way you can tag them. The monarchs fly all the way to Mexico. Or if they try to fly all the way to Mexico, and a number of them make it there. If you tag them with a little sticker that you put on their wings, people down there can recover them and put them on Monarch Watch, which is the website that it's all recorded on. And every year we have an open house that we tag all of our butterflies and release them. So next fall, that would be something that anybody could come to.
That would be great. Maybe the future business opportunity. One of the high points, about a year or so ago, I went to visit the Butterfly Conservatory in Canada, in Niagara Falls, just across the bridge. There's a butterfly conservatory there, and it's this huge, huge jungle, and you walk through, and butterflies, thousands of butterflies come, and they land on you, and it was this wonderful experience. But that's far away. We could develop one here and attract tourists.
All right, thank you very, very much. It was a pleasure to see you here.
Thank you.
Now, Leslyn, did you have another comment?
Yes, I did. Okay. I did. Well, after Peter's real introduction of what teaching is all about, you know, I couldn't help myself but encourage Joanna to think about it. There are a couple of things I want to talk about. Speaking of young people and amazing stuff that they do and encouraging, I had the opportunity today, and I saw Martha briefly for a moment, to sit in a workshop, an all-day workshop on building bridges for a sustainable and socially just community. And I thought about, in one of our breakout sessions, we were just talking about how to keep sustainability alive and started thinking about our young people and how to encourage and keep them motivated. And so on that note, I want to talk about, I just give big kudos, a big shout out to a group of young people who, as we speak, are being honored at Ithaca High School. These are fifth graders who this past summer, under the coaching skills and leadership skills of a community long born right here, community member Ricky Milton, took this fifth grade basketball team all the way to the national AAU championship, and they came back to our community as champions. We're very proud of them. And right now, they're at Ithaca High School with a large auditorium of people, I understand, being recognized. Community members really wanted to support these children and show them that the community is behind them and we will continue to support them in making positive choices, as young as fifth graders, and they're that disciplined to do this. So community members bought them rings, championship rings, and they're being presented with them, and I know they're very proud. Restaurants offer dinners for them, and I'm just so proud of them and what they have accomplished, and hope that it's the kind of model of community support that will help us to stay sustainable, to help us to grow, to help us to look out for each other and restore that sense of community. So big shout out to Ricky for his hard work with them. And big shout out to the children and the caregivers for just sticking with it and exercising the kind of discipline that would make them go all the way to the national championships and come back representing Tompkins County as champion. So, yay, fifth grade. I also want to mention a couple of other things that are happening. On December 3rd, which will happen before our next meeting, is the Ithaca Alternative Gift Fair. I want to mention it because, and this we know, as we've been slicing and dicing budgets for a lot of people, this is a place where many of our nonprofit agencies make some money. And so I want to encourage everyone to think about shopping alternatively. You buy a gift that can be presented to someone in their honor, in their name. So you can, you know, purchase $5 worth of stockings from the, you're not actually getting the stockings from the Women's Opportunity Center. You know, pay for that so they can have those supplies there for women who are coming. And you send that little card that says a gift in, you know, in the amount of was made in your name too. And so somebody gets an alternative gift as opposed to stuff with wrapping and boxes and so on and so forth. So please, please, if you can, it's happening right in our backyard at the Presbyterian Church and the Baptist Church. We have probably 66, if not 70, nonprofit agencies in our community that will be there represented. So I encourage everyone to please come. It's from 10, I think, until 6 on Saturday, December 3rd. Please come shop. I also want to mention, I got this note on my desk from the second soprano. Oh, my God, it was just the cutest note I'd seen. Written to us, it says, sincerely, your enthusiastic second soprano of the Dorothy Cotton Jubilee Singers. There is a concert with the Dorothy Cotton Jubilee Singers happening on Sunday, December 4th at the State Theater, 3 p.m. Tickets are available. Seats are available. Please go support this group that is committed to the committed and dedicated to the preservation of Negro spirituals, which we all know were the songs that helped get black folks and folks in slavery through the days. So we want to encourage that. And if you don't know who our enthusiastic second soprano is, she is our deputy county administrator. So please go support Paula and the Dorothy Cotton Jubilee Singers. And last but not least, I want to mention that this Friday, we're in the season of Thanksgiving, is the annual GIAC Harvest Festival, where it's one of our special events where we take the time to just say thanks to the community and provide a meal lovingly cooked by the GX staff and all the volunteers in the community. I mention it also because we always, always need volunteer help. Will has been gracious. He's here almost every year serving up and running, you know, gravy up and down the stairs or whatever it is. But we need volunteer help. There are about 450 people who get served at this event every year, as long as the weather's good. So we're excited about it. It's this Friday, 6 to 7:30. P.M. at the Beverly J. Martin Elementary School. We're outgrowing our spaces for these events. So please come by, volunteer, or just enjoy a meal and fellowship with some people in the community who you might not have had a chance to meet or even talk to, people from all walks of life. So please come, if nothing else, just to sample my turkey. You know. Please come out. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. I'm Brian.
Thanks, Martha. I know we have a long agenda, and in the interest of brevity, I'll just say it was almost good that you, Leslie, pointed out the boys' basketball team, because I've been thinking about this for several meetings now. I mean, we're at the point where we're hopefully done with the budget stuff after today, and I kind of long for the days when we started out these meetings with kind of a sports update type thing. I just happened to think about that. And also, lastly, Martha, I was wondering if you might consider just for the evening maybe switching places with Peter for tonight, because he's obviously on a roll after after those two presentations.
I'm too tired to get up.
I would imagine you are at this point, but that's great news. I'm glad that you took the time to point out the award that Ryan Slocum got, and just the professionalism in general I've got to say, most any law enforcement officer that I know in this area. So I appreciate you saying that. So.
Thank you, Brian. If it's okay, I guess I'll stay here. Kathy, anyone else?
Thank you. Everybody, I wanted to draw a comparison here tonight between the different kinds of activism represented around the table. I was thinking as I was listening to some of my friends talking today, lamenting the fact that the public hearing for the Esgeist is going to be on the same day as many of the actions for the Occupy movement. And I just wanted to comment my own opinion that these are inextricably combined and that they're really the same movement. And I know many of us around the table know that, but, you know, I saw some comments on Facebook and other social media saying, isn't it a shame I have to pick one or the other? Activism is a really strong thing. It's actually what our country was founded on, and I think these two movements in particular are related to the same thing. So I want to encourage everybody who can to do something, whether it's in your local community, whether it's traveling to Binghamton to make comments. And by the way, Martha sent out a really helpful email today, because some people don't know what to say at a public hearing like that. And it kind of breaks it down and gives resources where you could go and pick out things that you like. And also Walter Hang on his Toxics Targeting site has some things. Folks that are interested in the Occupy movement, there's clearly going to be things everywhere, Washington, New York City, even perhaps here in Ithaca. I just want to say that the country is waking up, and we're finding ways for regular, ordinary people to say, you're not listening to me, corporate America. You're not listening to me, national political representatives. It's time for you to start representing the 99%. And the anti-fracking activism that's going on is, to me, just as refreshing as the Occupy movement. So don't despair. If you can't be everywhere at once, everybody's doing their part. And I just want to say thank you to my community.
Thank you very much, Kathy. That's great. Anyone else? Well, for my report, let me pick up where you've left off. The as far as the people speaking, the local elections were last week, and I think probably people saw in the front page of the Journal 2 days later the sort of summary statement that a lot of the elected people who are running with sort of against fracking as part of their platform in Tompkins County, all those folks all won, many by convincing margins. In other counties, the same thing happened. It wasn't a clean sweep around the state. I think Sullivan County, the opposite happened. But there's something about what happened that made me think that maybe this isn't inevitable. That maybe, you know, New York might actually be leading the way. The Scientific American had a big article this week saying that the science isn't there yet. We don't really know how safe this is. And since everybody's been saying, well, we've got to decide this on the science, I think that's a pretty good source. So I will be going down to Binghamton on Thursday. I know several other people are also from here are planning to do that. Speaking of Binghamton, the Southern Tier Regional Economic Development Council's strategic plan, and Binghamton because that's where we had most of our meetings, plan was submitted over the weekend to Albany. It's online. If you go to New York, nyworks.ny.gov, and then go to Southern Tier, it's right near the top of that page. Don't hit print right away. It's a couple hundred pages and with a lot of pictures and color, and so... but it's very interesting reading. I haven't had a chance to go through it all, but the other councils also, I think, have their reports up online. It probably would be very interesting to take some time and look through all of them and then be able to understand why we're going to win. So, and I just wanted to say that yesterday I had the pleasure of speaking at a workshop and great pleasure of going with Will, who... It was terrific to have somebody else drive there and back to New Paltz, actually the Mohonk Mountain House, which is just really a very cool place. Right? Never been there before. The Omnibus Consortium, which is a group of, literally a consortium of a bunch of different organizations that have been working for a number of years about fairer taxation, and in particular now have as their main cause a circuit breaker as a solution on high property taxes in New York. And they described how they actually had legislative support to pass a circuit breaker measure in June of 2010, the day that there was the famous coup where a couple of Democrats decided to move over to the Republican side and kind of all hell broke loose in Albany. So that was actually a direct casualty of that event, series of events. And then since then, we sort of haven't heard much about it, except that we Now we have a tax cap, which is really not quite the solution to high property taxes that some of us would hope. So I spoke about the tax cap from the county's point of view. Made a call to NYSAC and to find out what the latest is with counties around the state. And Dave Lucas from NYSAC thought that in the short term, counties, larger counties may fare better than smaller counties under the tax cap. But eventually, we will all go underwater without mandate relief. He thought that this year, about 5 or 10 counties may go over the tax cap, although about 20 counties, as of last Thursday, still hadn't put their budgets out there. So as Joe said last week, we really are well ahead of the timetable for many counties in the state. The solutions, so-called solutions, that counties have used to avoid going over the cap would be to spend down the reserves, borrow money for ongoing expenses such as simple maintenance, eliminate discretionary programs, and layoffs of staff. So not particularly good fiscal policy, but those are things that counties are in this situation being forced to do. I want to thank Joe for putting together the PowerPoint, and it was very helpful, extremely well done. So it made my job easier. I also want to take just a second and talk about the situation for school districts, because several of the speakers talked about how are school districts going to fare under the tax cap. Now, they haven't faced it yet. They're looking forward, to next spring. And, Peter, your impassioned plea about education. New York's children are not going to fare well under this. Just a couple of statistics. The bottom 10% of school districts, in terms of wealth of the district, at this point, this year, raise on average spend $18,000 per pupil. The top 10%, in terms of wealth, spend $36,000 per pupil. Now, that's a big difference, 18 versus 36,000. When you look at the cap, because it's all based on percentages, but those bottom 10% will be able to add $11 per pupil and stay under the cap. The top districts will be able to add $566 per pupil. Now, health insurance for all districts is pretty much the same. The increases in health insurance between $500 and $800 per pupil. So those poorer districts will have to cut their budgets just to pay for the health insurance increases, whereas the richer districts will be able to pay for the health increases and still have about $86 on average left over for other expenses. So this this so-called public policy of the tax cap is going to take a system that is already incredibly unfair to our residents, our children who are less well off, and make it devastatingly even more unfair. And besides the fact that, richer districts are probably going to go over the cap anyway, or be more likely to go over the cap, but even under the cap, the discrimination is tremendous, and it's something that I think New Yorkers should be aware of, because this is what they get.
Yeah. Can I just have a quick question about that? Can you tell us who the Omnibus Coalition is? That what you call them? Who is that? And is that a state body or a...
It's a group of other organizations. Ron Deutsch is the leader with Frank, whose organization is New Yorkers for Fiscal Fairness. Frank Morrow from Fiscal Policy Institute. Speakers included people from the League of Women Voters, New York State Parent Teacher Association. There's New York State Property Tax Reform Coalition, TaxNightmare.org. I mean, there are all sorts of groups, and they kind of have been working under different on different pieces of this, and kind of came together last year, basically as a part of this Omnibus Consortium. A really elegant name, but if you want to find out more, OmnibusTaxSolution.org, or just Ron Deutsch and Frank Morrow are pretty well are easy to find on the web, and they're the probably the leaders, I would say the leaders
and,
of.
And then, so what, and were we being asked to participate sort of officially as the legislature, or this was
they want to have
they looking for action on our part of our body?
No. I mean, my part was just to tell them what was happening with counties, and I talked about the Medicaid takeover legislation. Their angle is more global because they're looking at the whole property tax bill, so including schools, towns, villages, and counties, and cities. A circuit breaker, very briefly. Circuit breaker is you take your whole property tax bill and basically compare it to your income, and there's a certain above a certain level, you actually get a credit on your state income tax, so that nobody's paying any more than a certain percentage of their income as property tax. So it's a little confusing. It's a lot more complicated to explain than tax cap. So that's why we have the tax cap and not the circuit breaker.
So. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you. If there's nothing else, Dooley.
If you would indulge me, I should have raised my hand under privilege of the floor.
Sure.
And I would like to mention something now. Kathy Herrera is speaking about conflicting activities on the same date is what reminded me. December 1st, when essentially everyone is going to be at the State Theater, there are some people who won't be because December 1st is the date that the Borg Warner Room in the County Library was reserved to schedule a presentation from students in Restoration Ecology Horticulture 4400 at Cornell. This year's Real World project that they took on was analyzing the issues and reporting their findings on dredging Cayuga Inlet. So there will be some of us there instead. We'll come to the other State Theater late.
Thank you, Julie. County Administrator Report, Joe Mariano.
Thanks, Martha. Long agenda, so I'll be very brief tonight. It's really just a few updates. I attended a meeting this morning of the Workforce Investment Board, and I thought you'd want to know just kind of a recap and a look back at summer jobs this year, which is, I think, a good news story. With very short notice and very limited resources, the combination of the One Stop Employment Center and the City Youth Bureau did put 135 kids from low-income families to work this summer, giving them meaningful employment opportunities. Some kids in foster care, some kids homeless, all of these kids in low-income situations. And again, with a lot of good work from staff, 135 found work. We brought about $194,000 of grant money, TANF money, into this community to pay for that. And if these kids are like my kids used to be, that money was quickly put into circulation in our economy. It's a multiplier effect already. I see Ken Slaughter in the back of the room. I just wanted to update you. Last time I was here, we talked about an opportunity that we have to move quickly on to look at leasing solar panels that might be put on roofs of county buildings, low-cost leases that are underwritten by a tax credit and some grant money. And we've proceeded to do our due diligence with that idea. We've looked at the costs and the benefits. It looks as if the benefits well exceed the costs, but the county could save something like $9,000 a year on 7 buildings if we do it. We haven't concluded yet that we should, but we are moving right along with due diligence, and hopefully within the next couple of weeks we'll have some contracts in hand to look at and can come back to you and say that this looks like a good deal for the county. It sure looks as if it will, and we thank Ken Schlatter for bringing this to our attention. We've also alerted other governments throughout the county through the TCOG organization about the opportunity as well. Last item on my list, I think last time too, we talked about the search process for mental health commissioner. I can tell you tonight that we have now essentially seated all members of the search committee. It will not be a small committee. It looks like about 13. Representatives on the committee, but that reflects the interest that are really stakeholders in this decision. My expectation is within the next couple of weeks we'll have an organizational meeting. I would suspect this will take at least 3 or 4 months to work its way all the way through to conclusion and decision, but we are taking the first steps forward with the establishment of the search committee. That's my report. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Joe. Frank?
Joe, a week or so ago, the Journal read an article on reimbursements from various insurance companies to municipalities. And last night at the Danby Town Board meeting, I'd asked out loud if they had heard anything, and they did get a reimbursement on their health insurance. Do you know if we're in line for a reimbursement on our health insurance?
I know that our consultants have prepared and, I think, presented the paperwork for that, Frank. I don't know that we've gotten a reimbursement, but I do believe the paperwork was submitted for that.
Thanks.
Carol?
Yeah, I was going to conclude something about this, the Liberty Solar opportunity in the, under the F&I report, but since you point out Ken is here, can I have permission to talk a little bit about that now? Just to add a little bit, because we talked about this at length at F&I, and all in all, I think we felt, we encouraged you to go back and explore this, and I think there was a sense that on balance it makes sense for us to move forward. It's an opportunity to take advantage of this tax credit program. First of all, people should understand about these tax credit programs that the way that they work is that investors get to take to get money subtracted from their taxes in order to provide public money. Instead of the old way of doing things where we taxed the wealthy at higher rates and we had public money to award, the way the tax credits work is that people take a deduction. For every dollar of deduction you take, only a certain amount of that dollar goes to actually create the projects. It's kind of a nuts system. But it is here, and it is the game that there is in town, so it seems to make sense to make use of it. It will allow us to save for every building at which we decide to let Liberty Solar use about 3,000 square feet of space on our roofs, or our towns decide to participate on their roofs. There might be savings of approximately $125 to $300 a month in our energy costs, which is obviously of benefit to us, and they come in and own and maintain and worry about the maintenance of the panels. The discussion, though, I just want to make sure to note so that Ken hears the downside of this that we discussed was that we don't get to take credit for the reductions in emissions. So Tompkins County has our plan to reduce emissions by, is it 50% by the year 2020, so whatever our numbers are. Part of the deal with Liberty Solar is that they would get to take those emissions credits, and that there are people, there was a lot of discussion back when the whole notion of sale of carbon credits versus other ways of reining in emissions was being, by regulation, was being explored. The EMC took a strong position that the sale of carbon credits really just sort of allows emissions to happen somewhere else, essentially. But on balance, the committee did say that we're on board with this. Since then, I've also seen articles about the extent to which the costs for installing solar on our own might come down in the next few years. And there are signs in that regard. If we waited 2, 3, 4, 5 years or maybe more, we might be able to buy panels at a much lower cost than we can now. I explored that with Ed Marks as to how realistic that is. He didn't feel that was, we can count on that and depend on that in the time frame that this program will operate and that this still made sense to go ahead. So staff is still doing that, and we appreciate it. I did want Ken to hear the sense of the discussion that we've had. Thank you.
All right. County Attorney report, Jonathan Wood.
No report.
David Squires, Finance Director.
No report.
All right. Thank you. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Frank Proto.
Yes, I'd like to add resolution S, urging passage of Senate Bill S5889-B and Assembly Bill A8644 that would implement a multi-year state takeover of the local share of Medicaid.
All right. Second by Kathy. Frank, go ahead.
I'd like to withdraw Resolution L at the request of another legislator until such time as her municipality has an opportunity to review the content of that resolution.
All right. We need to vote to add. Okay. On adding Resolution S, we need to vote to add that. We need to have 10 votes to approve adding it to the agenda tonight. Ready to vote? All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? Thank you. That's unanimous. Okay. Is that it for the motions? All right. I'll read the consent agenda. If there are any items that you'd like to have withdrawn, please just shout out. Resolution A, budget adjustment, various departments. Resolution B, budget adjustment, emergency response. Resolution C, allow New York State Department of Transportation to use County Route 135 Cayuta Road as a detour in calendar year 2012. Resolution D, authorizing acceptance of a New York State Department of Transportation grant to perform sustainable master plan update, Phase 2 GIS component at the Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport. Resolution E, authorizing acceptance of a New York State grant to acquire and refurbish friction measuring equipment at the Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport. Resolution F, authorizing acceptance of a New York State grant to construct sand storage building at the Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport. Resolution D, authorizing acceptance of a New York State grant to perform engineering design for the rehabilitation of the terminal ramp, Ithaca Terminal Ramp Rehabilitation Design. Resolution H, authorizing acceptance of a New York State grant to construct apron expansion, approximately 40,000 square feet, Phase 3, Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport. And Resolution I, establishing a budget for two Federal Transit Administration capital projects, replacement paratransit buses for Gadabout Incorporated and wheelchair accessible taxi for Ithaca Dispatch Incorporated, and the appointment of Leslie McBean Claiborne to the Downtown Ithaca Alliance for a term through April 15, 2013. Is there a motion on the consent agenda? Moved by Frank, seconded by Carol. All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. I would like to take liberty of moving the Health and Human Services Committee report and resolutions up so that staff can go home once we're done.
Good move.
Frank Proto, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Very briefly, let me just give you a quick report on the meeting that took place on November 9th. Most of the actions that the committee took are reflected on the agenda tonight. But we did have a very interesting presentation, and I'd like to thank Nathan for arranging it. A gentleman by the name of Robert Lathrop.
Roger
Lathrop.
Yes.
Okay. From Guthrie came to talk to us about the healthcare system and the readmission situation with regard to hospitals, and how important it is to have interaction with so many of the agencies and the coordination within the community. He was very complimentary of our health department and also visiting nurse service for their action with Guthrie, and it precipitated more discussion, and I think we're going to have him back because it was very interesting and very informative. Nathan, seriously, thanks very much for arranging that. There was a discussion that was precipitated by Patricia Carey with regard to a $442,000 Medicaid reconciliation that was coming up, and you'll probably be hearing more about that as time goes on. The next committee meeting is December 14th. Two other items that earlier today that you probably would be appreciative of. WHCU, Gary Stewart had arranged for Dave Veazer and Jeff Dunn to interview representatives from two of our agencies in town, Hospicare and, again, Visiting Nurse Service, to talk about the collaboration that Lisa Holmes has been very instrumental in putting together. Because of the change in the Medicare arrangements that is going to take place in 2014, it's important that we start building these relationships. And Lisa submitted the grant paperwork the end of October, and this is to gain, hopefully, a piece of the $500 million that the federal bill has set aside. We're hoping that that comes together. And the presentation was really well received this morning. And I'd personally like to thank WHCU for sponsoring that. The Cougar Medical Center was one of the other sponsors of that as well. Something we ought to sit down and discuss at the next committee meeting. I'll stop there, Martha, and just introduce the resolutions. I want to introduce Resolution J. Let me make sure I have the right. Appropriation from Contingent Fund for Terminal Pay Health Department pending the committee meeting and the committees that are involved, and I'd like to move that.
Second by Will. Is there any discussion? All right, it's a short roll call vote.
Ms. Rivera?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Would anyone like to be recorded as no? All right, that's unanimous.
Resolution K, and there's a revised one in your packets. The revision is, let me move it, and then I'll tell you what the revisions are. It's a resolution, County Health Department activities associated with the gas drilling in the Marcellus Shale, Utica Shale, and other low permeability gas reservoirs in New York State.
It's moved by Frank, seconded by Pam.
The revisions simply are to clarify the type of drilling, high volume hydrofracking, and also to change the wording on the advisory council to advisory panel. And Madam Chair, if you just give me a second just to highlight a couple of the items in here. The health department is very concerned about the cost associated with some of the revisions that the DEC is proposing. Some of us have spoken about this in the past. I know Martha has, I have, Carol has, and the health department has. Some of the changes that they're proposing in the monitoring of not only the gas wells, but the drinking water wells, and some of the reports, the complaints, and the concerns of citizens are not going to be, have not yet been funded or even wording to that effect by the state. If we have to undertake that kind of monitoring on behalf of the DEC, according to the health department, they're talking about adding one or two full-time qualified staff, and that's going to be a financial burden to the county. The second large item, of course, the first one is financial. Second item is that on this panel that they've put together, that the governor has put together, and Commissioner Martins, the DEC commissioner, has been involved with, this is a total, I'd like to think it's just an oversight, but I think it was orchestrated, and I'm probably going to get nailed for saying that. There isn't one member of a health department on that panel, and it's really a little bit of a poke in the eye. And the resolution speaks to why we should have health department representation on a panel that that involves health department oversight. So the committee had quite a discussion about this. There's a similar resolution coming from the Board of Health. It addresses some different items other than the financing, and I believe that's going directly in. Perhaps Will is in a better position to speak about that because he's our Board of Health representative. Sorry to embarrass you. But go ahead, Will, if you want to say something about that resolution.
Okay. Actually, why don't you continue on this?
Wanted to just go ahead, please?
Yeah.
Are there any, do you have any questions or comments about that, the resolution that's on the floor?
Any comments? Julie?
I think the words are slightly out of order. I think it's supposed to be high-volume hydraulic fracturing. Other than that, it seems fine.
We can fix that. Thanks, Stu.
High-volume hydraulic fracturing. So there's several places where that shows up. That's friendly,
sure.
Pam?
Yes.
Okay. Carol?
Yeah, I support this, and I think I'll vote for it, but I would like to hear, I have a couple of questions about it. The first is the very last whereas talks about the Department of Health presenting resource needs to the advisory panel. I have tried and have talked to the DEC about what information they've presented to the advisory panel, and their official position is that they are not releasing to the public anything about what information they've presented to the advisory panel. This happened to be on the tax, the various permit, new permit fee and severance tax options that we had asked to weigh in on. Did the Department of Health, do we have certain information as to what was presented, or are we betraying confidences keeping this whereas in there?
Madam Chair, may I ask Liz Cameron, who's a representative from Environmental Health, to speak?
The situation with the with what was presented by the State Health Department to the advisory panel, it was presented in a confidential setting. However, their specific presentation was leaked to the press,
right,
and therefore it became public. So I have a copy of their presentation, and they did not include the resource needs of local health departments, except to say that they were not including addressing the resource needs of local health departments. They did indicate to us that they were instructed not to address our needs.
Right. So I have a question then about the advisability of keeping in that whereas if we're going to get whoever leaked it into any trouble with their peers on the panel for having leaked.
It's public information now, so it has been released.
It is out there. Okay.
That one specific presentation.
Thank you. And then I have a question. I support this, and I absolutely believe that the health department needs to have its additional costs covered. I know you've already managed to squeeze in an awful amount of work on this in a budget that we didn't allot to you. We didn't really allot time for you to do it, but you've managed to do so. The county has other departments that have done that. I mean, everything from the sheriff's department in what it's going to take for increased work on their part to social services. We had talked about, and actually at one point in our budget process, introduced a measly $17,000 to our budget to help our assessment department not rely on the work of volunteers for their efforts. Our highway department, with our road preservation law, has done hours and hours of work, and we're going to be, talking with contractors. So I have some concerns about how we make sure that we ask that those additional costs get added as well. I applaud the health department for coming to us with this, and the answer is not necessarily to not do theirs because the others ought to come to us with similar.
Perhaps the committee chairs that oversee the sheriff's department, the highway department, assessment, any other departments where there are going to be costs should take this resolution, which, as Carol just said, I applaud. I mean, this is really important. I really thank the health department for putting this information together and taking this stand. This sort of is a good model for the other departments to have a look at it. And so, committee chairs, please have at it and encourage the relevant departments to also weigh in with your own resolutions. Jim, did you have your hand up, or Mike?
Yes, I have my hand up. We have in the 2012 budget the contingency account, and as we move forward with all of these various things that may or may not come forward, then at that point it would make sense for departments to come to the committee and ask for money, and we will, you know, decide at that point, you know,
right,
how to deal with it.
The point is, in weighing in, not exactly on the DSGIS, but in weighing in before, while the panel is still talking and working on these issues, I think it's important that local costs be documented. I will point out that, Frank, they also didn't have representatives of local government at all on the initial panel, and had to add a town supervisor and a county executive. So only after people complained. So,
right.
Anything else?
Can I?
Yeah.
Thanks, Martha. Jim, I appreciate what you're saying about the fact that we've set money aside and the department can come forward. The concern here can come forward to the county. The concern here is to let the DEC know that we're not asleep at the switch, that they haven't paid attention. They're dumping. This is another unfunded mandate, if you will, and it's not going to be cheap. And we're not the only health department in the state that's addressing this. But I think the health department is appreciative of the recognition that they can come forward and ask for some financial help when and if this comes to pass. And thank you.
Are we ready to vote here? I think we're probably ready to vote. We have a long agenda.
Well,
I
just, while we're talking about leaked documents, I just think it's important for people to understand that the eight options that have been presented to that governor's advisory panel for ways to add permit fees and severance taxes, 7.5 of those are options that bring money to state to meet the state additional costs for the various departments at the state level. One of the options includes a possibility for adding urban. And then it's urban centers over a certain size that is well beyond any size in Tompkins County. So there, at this point, the panel is not looking at any options, as far as I understand, to increase costs and reimburse locals for the added costs for all of these departments.
All right, ready to vote with those revisions that Dooley mentioned? All in favor, please raise your hand.
Okay.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. Thank you, Liz. Go ahead, Frank.
Okay, resolution M, as in Mary. Authorization to submit application and fee to New York State Department of Health for a licensed home care service agency operating certificate by the health department. And I'll move that.
Second by Dooley. All right. Any discussion? Jim, discussion?
Yes. No, oh, did you say discussion or second?
It was second by Dooley.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm acting my age and dozing off. Everything is so well.
You don't have any discussion?
Invigorating.
All right.
So far.
Okay.
I do have some discussion. We passed this, and Joe, and I should have asked you this before. Have we heard anything from HCR about the status of anything, where we are, and all of that?
Yeah, we have a draft management contract and a draft sale agreement that's been presented by them. We just received that a few days ago. We're expected to meet internally within the next few days. So it is proceeding.
Thank you.
We've also checked with other counties, because there are other counties that have, you know, contracted with HCR to see what, if anything, they did to vary the contracts. We're getting input from them about either lessons learned or how they approach those things.
Thank you.
Lesson, and then Will.
Jim, Howard Dean, or Rick Perry, which version of configuration do you want? I mean, I can help you out there.
A top 10 list might be good.
I actually just needed, and thank you for the question, Jim. That was part of my question. I also just needed an explanation. Is it that ACR is not ready to apply for their own, or do we still have to apply for a license? I didn't understand this at all.
Can we explain? I think this allows us to continue operations in-home operations beyond those offered by the CHOP. Is that correct?
Ooh, y'all gonna have to help me out.
Right. Madam Chair.
Why? I don't get it. I really don't.
Listen, we're required to maintain one service that we have to continue to provide. And Brenda's in a better position to address that. But we have to have a license to perform that service. And that's a requirement. But go
ahead. Actually, that would be for our CHA. We are required to provide one service exclusively until the full transition is done. But because we have our MOMS program, we have TBDOT, which is direct observed therapy, and other services that we render in the home, the state requires us to be a licensed agency. Under a licensed agency, we can't bill Medicare and Medicaid. Under a certified agency, much different regulations, and we're permitted to bill for Medicare and Medicaid reimbursement. So this will just permit us to do our public health functions in the home.
Thank you. Right.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Brent.
Okay, Will?
Follow up on the, Joe, can you tell us the process in terms of the management contract? Will that be going through committee once you have worked on it?
Yes.
And what's the time frame, do you think, for that?
Well, we'd like to move this right along. We're down to just a few nurses now, so we really would like to make this transition as quickly as possible. I'm hoping within the next month we'll be able to be done with that part of the transition, the management contract.
Thank you.
Are we ready to vote? All right. All in favor of Resolution M, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Frank, why don't you take Resolution S?
Want to do that now? Resolution S, I'd like to, if you permit me, I would like to ask Kathy Herrera to present this simply because she brought it to committee. As a member of the Health Committee.
Thank you, Frank. Thanks, Martha. I brought this to the Health Committee. Many of y'all see in your red... Oh, I got to move it. Okay. Resolution S, urging passage of Senate Bill S-5889B and Assembly Bill A-8644 that would implement a multi-year state takeover of the local share of Medicaid. And I so move.
Second.
Second by Frank.
I found a copy of this from another county in the red folder a few weeks ago. We're usually first to do so many things, and when I realized that another county had gone forward with this very sensible idea, I thought this is something we should do. I don't hold a lot of illusions that the state will listen to us and run and go do it, but it makes so much sense. You know, we talk about mandates, and if the state was to take on this legislation that was really quite reasonable that has been suggested in the Senate bill and the Assembly bill, it would ease the state mandates at the local level. For us, the Medicaid costs would be, even in a multi-year schedule, would be eased considerably. I'd like for us to go on record as showing that we would support this option, and I'd appreciate your support.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate you bringing it. And, you know, as long as we didn't say... We're sorry we weren't the first, but that's good. Any other discussion? Nathan, then Dooley.
I just wanted to note a couple figures here just for the public. It's that this would, if this bill actually got passed, the state takeover of Medicaid would be a 28% reduction in the county property taxes, which I think is about $300 for the average home in Tompkins County.
That's right. Dooley?
Well, I think I now understand maybe the answer to my question, which is in the final resolve, which asks that a certified copy of this resolution be forwarded to the county finance director. That was probably in the other county's resolution. It seems funny to me that we're asking to forward a copy to David. And
my fault in the cutting and pasting. So we could take that out since clearly the county finance director probably knows all about this.
Yeah. All right, so then that resolution shall be forwarded to Governor Andrew Cuomo, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Carol?
If anybody knows, do we know anything about who is sponsoring this bill and whether there are sort of a large number of co-sponsors and then any competing bills or, you know, similar bills that are being discussed and the advantage, pros or cons of this one as opposed to those others?
Kevin?
Briefly, I am 99% sure that Barbara Lifton is supporting the assembly bill. There may be some other versions that request that the state pay everyone's income tax forever and other suggestions like that. This one I latched onto because, as far as I can tell, it's the most reasonable one. And that's relative, but in terms of the possibility of it being enacted and its actual practicality, and effectiveness, efficacy, if you will, this is the one, and that's why I latched onto it. But other people at the committee mentioned other sponsors, both on the Senate side and on the Assembly side. I just can't recall them right now. Does anybody remember?
Yeah, there are 20 co-sponsors. It's Senator Gallivan's bill in the Senate, and with 20 co-sponsors, Assemblywoman Paulin's bill in the Assembly with 32 co-sponsors, and our Senators Nazolio, O'Mara, and Seward, and Barbara Lifton, Assemblywoman Lifton, are all co-sponsors. So you would think that would be enough to get something passed, but we'll see. So, and it is an 8-year takeover. It's not a precipitous thing.
Got to start somewhere, right?
Absolutely. Anything else? All right, ready to vote. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. All set, Frank? You're
yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. Public Safety Committee, Peter Stein, Chair.
Yes, let's see. I don't think I reported on what happened at the last Public Safety meeting, right? We had... Oh, yeah, it's because the month starts on the 1st, right? I mean, the 1st falls on a Tuesday. Sorry. Okay, thank you. I'm fading fast here.
Peter, you were on such a roll earlier.
It was too much. Okay, I just rolled off. We had a couple of interesting discussions at the last public safety meeting. We got the jail statistics and... noted that there seemed to be something of an anomaly over the past 3 months in that we had something like 3 board outs and 13 vacancies in the jail. And now, it's you can't off the top of your head answer something like that because you can't put any person in any cell. This is a complicated set of requirements having to do with young people, older people, men, women, people that don't get along with other people, and so on and so forth, that don't allow you to put any person in any vacancy. And so you can't expect to have 0 vacancies when you have a board out. But it did seem to some of us that 13 vacancies and not having room for at least one of those 3 board outs was surprising. And so we asked for an explanation, and Derek said they would look into it and explain why indeed that has happened over the past 3 months. We also got the first look at the information about overtime. And I know we started, when we had these discussions during the budget period, we got interested in overtime and trying to understand exactly where the overtime came from. And it's difficult to get a handle on this thing because the numbers are complicated and there's many, many different reasons why an overtime takes place. But the undersheriff did provide us with information that was grouped in certain ways that gave me, at least, a much better feel for what the overtime is all about. And there are generally 3 different classifications of overtime. Oh, and I should say I'm just talking about the road patrol. I'm not talking about corrections. There were 3 different reasons for overtime. One was overtime that doesn't cost us anything. And overtime that doesn't cost us anything because the cost of the overtime is reimbursed by an agency. So there are some grants that we get where an agency says we get a grant for enforcing DWI, but a condition is that we can't use that to pay for our normal time, that it has to be used only for an overtime. So that was a considerable fraction, probably something like a third of the overtime was in that classification. So that should not disturb us. Indeed, that overtime should please us. Another third of it was what I would call unpredicted situations. And that runs a whole gamut of things, like a person, a deputy comes to the end of his shift, but he hasn't finished the paperwork yet. Well, he's still with the person the DWI suspect that he's apprehended and has to finish the process. And it makes no sense whatsoever to have him leave in the middle of this job or in the middle of a domestic dispute to call in the next person to do. So, and there are a number of things like that, that, for instance, the boat patrol when we had to shut off the inlet, or a multi-agency stakeout someplace or other. Those things come up, and I don't think any of us wants to look into were they reasonable things or not. So as far as I was concerned, those things are unpredictable and necessary. But the third part may also be necessary, but at least it wasn't clear to me the degree to which it was necessary. And that's what happens when someone is not available to carry on his or her shift, and another deputy is paid overtime to take over that shift. And exactly why that situation occurs, why was there so many situations where somebody that was assigned to a shift couldn't do that shift? And I've been working with the undersheriff to try to see if we can't get some more information about that. Oh, I should say that all of that data was simply a two-week period. He took what Derek did was took a two-week period and then looked through all of the records of all the deputies to see exactly where the overtime came from in each case. And we've been talking about ways that we could more systematically look into this one classification of a shortage on a shift where overtime is responsible for that. And we're still awaiting. They're currently about to do a study on the corrections staff to see where the overtime in the corrections department comes from. And perhaps in the end we'll learn something from all of this analysis. And I must say it's a bet because this data doesn't come by itself. It comes because someone has to sit down and not do something else to go through these records and find it. So we really have to find ways that you can do this automatically, electronically, or something like that if we're going to pursue this path. So that's what I have to report.
Thank you very much, Peter. Very interesting. Any questions or comments? All right, thank you. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean, Claiborne Chair.
Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee will meet next Wednesday, the day before Thanksgiving, and I was all amped about it because we were going to have our workplace survey report out, but I just learned when I walked in here that the committee that's working on it is a lot of work, and they were very ambitious, and so we'll not be able to present that next week. However, we have a long carryover item that we need to deal with and perhaps bring a recommendation to this legislature, to this body, to budget and then to this body. And that is around disability accommodations and access. This has been an item that we have started discussion and stops when other things have taken priority, and now it's really time for us to do something about it because it's becoming more of a concern. So that will be the big topic of our discussion next week, Wednesday. Feel free to stop in and join us if you are not busy preparing for Thanksgiving, while the rest of us are meeting. So that's my report.
Thank you, Leslie. Any questions? All right. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Carol Chalk, Chair.
Oh, hi. I was just adding up the amount. I don't have the total, but the airport is once again bringing big dollars to the community, and I appreciate your passing those resolutions as part of the consent agenda. From facilities, I just want to highlight that the old courthouse work, the exterior work on the old courthouse, is now complete under budget. And if you haven't stopped, if you know, as we rush in and out of our various meetings, it's easy to sort of just not stop and look at the outside of that building and how lovely that looks now. So stop and appreciate it, and let Arel know. He was very happy with working with the contractors and the architects on that one. And then we heard a report on fracture. We did meet twice this month, I will say. We had two meetings on November 4th and November 10th. We had a report on you may have seen information about fracture critical bridges in the news. There are 10 in our county that were released on a list by the state as being fracture critical, and a big deal made of that. In fact, that's really a matter of design rather than structure. These are bridges. A lot of bridges make it onto that list. Some make it onto the list because they really are structural, have structural problems. But there are some that, because they were built with trusses in particular rather than other methods of construction, it is that they require inspecting more frequently. And, in fact, we already are on a schedule of inspecting those every year instead of the way we inspect other bridges every other year. So we believe that we're okay in that regard. Highway staffing took up a lot of time. Joe has done, you know that we have several vacant positions. We had a complicated set of options the committee looked at for the way in which Joe would like to move forward with filling those positions or not filling those positions, and developed a sense of the committee that, let's see if I get this right, that we don't believe in there's basically there's the Commissioner of Public Works position. There is a highway manager position. Bill Sesney is retiring as of December 9th. And we thank him for his past service. And we've had a vacant engineer position. The recommendation that I think the committee accepted is that it does not make sense, given our financial situation, to hire a commissioner of public works for both financial and sort of structural reasons, organizational reasons, but that there's no reason to make a charter change at this point. That's a position we'll still would like to keep on the books, but recognizing that in more flush times and other times that we might want to go back to that. Joe presented a very complicated set of options for how to deal with the additional positions, and essentially the directions that we're moving in is to proceed with hiring for a highway director. There'll be a manager or director similar to the kind of job we have now, but we spent a lot of time going over that job description and the ways in which our needs have changed over the time since we've last were hiring into that position, and the kinds of functions that need to be covered by the department, including the traditional oversight of the highway crews and the people who oversee the highway crews, the technical expertise, you know, how thick does our pavement need to be, and how do you make sure that kind of technical information is conveyed to our staff in a way that that we build the roads we want to build. Project management, keeping projects moving forward through an ever increasingly complicated set of federal and state funding opportunities that are changing every day. In fact, just this morning at the ITC-TC meeting, we're hearing ways in which prior and maybe some upcoming new highway and bridge funding opportunities will be available. So we need somebody who can keep on top of those projects, and then the communication needs that we see communicating at all levels with public, with our committees, with staff, and with the outside world. So Joe is recommending, and we passed the sense of the body to move forward with a job description that includes, it's a sort of vastly ramped up job description and set of experience required for the highway director or manager. We're still looking into what title is most appropriate, and then to an engineer position that might be at a slightly higher level rather than a low or mid-range engineer, an engineer at a higher level engineer position within our civil service structure to be able to cover some of that increased communication as well as the engineering knowledge required. And then a plan that includes some additional administrative support in ways that utilize staff that we already have. So that is moving forward. We've had two meetings about it. We had that first meeting went for 3.25 hours, at the end of which we decided we needed more, and we need to come back again in a week. So we did that. And Joe has the job descriptions, if anybody is particularly interested in seeing them, before he finalizes the procedure for moving forward with those hires. Highway projects themselves. The state and federal funding, it's a moving target. We are hearing both, it is timed for our group of ITCTC projects to move forward, new things into the new TIP process. It continues to be unclear as to how much money will be available in what years. This is federal money that the state DOT decides how to allocate to various regions, and then to projects that we weigh in on what are our high priority projects within our region. There are federal bills instituting some potential new, I said bridge projects in particular. So it's a moving target, and when we get later to our capital and debt plan, that some of the projects that you see there in the later years, I think it's really just too soon to tell exactly where that funding will be. For the most part, the projects that we already have in the pipeline that are really moving forward, we are making a big effort, and the state DOT is making a big effort to help us continue to move forward to the point of reining in some of their projects that they had on the books for that federal money so that the local regions can move forward with some of our projects. But it is a changing world. The project that I'm bringing to you tonight, and I will move, is Resolution N, project that we want to move forward. It's Resolution N, authorization to execute a supplemental agreement with Erdman Anthony Associates, Inc., for design services upstream Forest Home Drive Bridge over Fall Creek, the town of Ithaca. And I will move that, and I can, if it's a second, there's a second, I can tell you a little bit more about that.
Maybe answer questions if there are any. Less than seconds then. Are there any questions on this resolution? Mike?
More of a comment, and I really want to thank Peter and the town of Ithaca for the copy of the resolution that's in our packets tonight, supporting the continuation of a one-lane bridge at that location. When the downstream bridge was replaced back in the mid-90s, that was very controversial whether it was to be one lane or two lane. And I think some of us that came onto the legislature at that time were convinced through the support of the town of Ithaca that it should stay as a one-lane bridge. So I think the same issue could be looked at with the second bridge, and I'm very glad to know the town of Ithaca is on board.
All right. Anyone else?
Well, let me just add. I mean, I think.
No. Are there any questions?
This is my report.
All right.
I think it's important for people to note that we are being asked for a very modestly small additional amount for design services to that bridge.
And our highway department has managed, in the face of the kinds of cuts that they're looking at, to come forward with a design for a bridge in a tight space where the design costs are a bit higher because we worked hard with the residents to upgrade in a way that works with their community and to fund... the design will require additional money for funding, but our highway department has also worked very hard to make sure that the entire additional amount of construction cost will be funded through now two separate federal programs. So the county share of this is going from $73,250 to $88,000, while the design will be a much more historically significant design. And they've done well, and I think it's worth recognizing that.
Are we ready to vote? All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that's unanimous.
And then the last thing that I have for you is Resolution O, establishing a unit charge for the 2012 solid waste annual fee. And I so move.
Second by Mike Lane, right?
I'll pass on the second.
Second by Leslin. All right. Okay. Any questions? All right. All in favor of Resolution O, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. All right. Thank you.
That is everything that I have for you, unless anybody from the committee. I mean, we really did a lot of work.
You should just tell the public that the solid waste annual fee will remain flat.
Yes. Thank you for doing that, Dooley. Solid waste will also be coming to us in the future with a plan at the ways in which they were starting to look. They're never content with their past successes. They're looking at options for what they will do with food waste in the future.
All right. For capital plan review, the committee will meet on Friday at 3:30. And that's my report for that committee. I'd like to have...
Can I make a request?
Yes.
I noticed on that agenda there's some pages, Exhibit 3, really tiny print. Can we be helped out? And even if it takes two pages, print that to where it's actually readable for us. It would be a big help.
I'm sorry, Exhibit 3?
Let me see which pages.
The capital plan. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, I'll look at that.
Thanks. I'm sorry, Exhibit 5. Oh, no, it starts out Exhibit 3, 4, and 5, 6.
It's for the committee. Everybody's confused.
7 is a little bigger.
All right, I'll look at...
Thanks.
I haven't actually opened it myself yet, so I'll look at it and see if we can get a bigger copy.
Sure would appreciate it.
Okay, let's have a five-minute break, a recess, and come back at 25 of. Thank you.